Well, as the UK awaits news on whether Theresa May can form government with the DUP, there are warnings about how any deal might tip the Northern Ireland's political balance. Its peace agreement requires the UK government to be an impartial broker. Now, they're very important words between all the competing interests in Northern Ireland. Here's the former Prime Minister, John Major, urging caution about sharing power with the Protestant Unionists.
The last thing anybody wishes to see is one or other of the communities so aggrieved that the hard men, who are still there lurking in the corners of the communities, decide that they wish to return to some form of violence. We really need to do everything we conceivably can to make sure that that doesn't happen. And that does require an impartial UK government.
Sir John Major there. And Sinn Féin has the co-owner of the power in the Northern Ireland. It's gone further and accused Theresa May of not honouring that Good Friday Agreement. Well, joining us now is Belfast-born Adrian Little, who's Professor of Political Science at Melbourne University and a keen observer. Hi, Adrian.
Hello.
It's pretty sobering to hear Sir John Major there, don't you think? A voice from the time of the Troubles, who really started that the latter-day peace process, reminding us that the peace needs ongoing active tending. I wonder how many people realise this?
Yes, the peace is fragile. The conflict endures. And whilst there has been significant progress since 1997 and the mid-1990s when John Major was in government, that's always a very tenuous peace, and it always requires further cultivation. So this is a troubling time.
In a way, it looks as though it's the sort of agreement that shouldn't have any big shocks delivered to it. If it could just be steady, it might have a hope. Is that reasonable to say?
The Good Friday Agreement?
Yes.
Yes, the Good Friday Agreement is really a big compromise. It was, at the time, it was called constructive ambiguity, by which it meant that basically it offered something to everyone, and it could be interpreted in multiple ways in favour of the different parties. So anything that threatens that fragility is potentially dangerous.
Since those comments by John Major, we've seen Gerry Adams, the Sinn Féin president, say that a deal such as is being proposed by Theresa May would be in breach of the agreement. Is the Northern Ireland situation emerging as a genuine problem for trying to set up a government in the UK?
Well, what we have to remember is that since March of this year, the Northern Ireland parties haven't been able to form a government in Northern Ireland. Let alone a government in the UK relying on one side of that division. So we often forget that there is a separate assembly in Belfast. It's a power-sharing agreement at Stormont Castle, and Sinn Féin and the DUP have not been able to come to an agreement on how to share power. So the idea that one of those parties is potentially going to prop up the government in Westminster is a very strange situation indeed.
Well, let's just go back to that, because what are the implications of this lack of a government in Stormont? Is it true that effectively it's being ruled already by Westminster, that this isn't gone back to Westminster rule, that this is not just a thing for the future, it's happening now?
Well, effectively, when the power-sharing executive is not in place, the powers are mainly exercised by the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland in the Westminster government. So whilst James Brokenshire, the current minister, is trying to facilitate agreement between the parties, until he's able to do that, power returns to Westminster effectively.
I think this is remarkable that this hasn't been fully grasped. How are people managing this? It seems such a reversion.
There is a very basic division in Northern Ireland, and the Northern Ireland electorate has moved further to the extreme since 1997. So what was interesting about the election results last week was that the middle ground of Northern Irish politics has effectively been evacuated. So the two middle ground parties that were the major brokers, if you like, of the Good Friday Agreement now have no MPs at all between them.
And this is
a complete carve-up between the DUP and Sinn Féin.
And this is exactly what Sir John Major is clearly, frankly, worried like mad about. In fact, he has suggested to Theresa May that she run a minority government rather than try to do this deal because there's so much at stake.
Yes, and there are precedents for minority governments in the UK. There was a minority Labour government in the mid-1970s, although it didn't last very long. And of course, Theresa May is going to be thinking about the medium term at least, and having a minority government would probably mean that we would end up back at the polls sooner rather than later.
Goodness me. And there's another issue here too, which I didn't realise until a Late Line interview earlier this week, that there is this financial scandal, this cash for ash, which has enveloped the DUP's Arlene Foster. That's from January this year. Can you summarise that for us or not?
Well, it's quite difficult to summarise, but it's a renewable heating initiative that was introduced, and there was a huge cash blowout. And the allegations are that some members of the DUP were personal beneficiaries of this scheme. So it's got a kind of, so there's a whiff of controversy and potential corruption about it. And the DUP has been very keen to avoid any kind of official investigation into that because it doesn't reflect particularly well on Arlene Foster. At the same time, Sinn Féin is pushing very, very hard to have this investigation. That's one of the main stumbling blocks that's prevented the two parties forming an executive since March.
And that's this whole vital issue of whether the UK government could appear to be an impartial broker, because clearly if they're dependent upon the votes of the DUP, how could they rule in an impartial fashion on maybe a call for a financial inquiry?
It certainly doesn't look very easy to do. Since the early 1990s, the view of the British government has been that they have no selfish or strategic interest in the future of Northern Ireland. In other words, they would leave it to the people of Northern Ireland and then the island of Ireland as a whole to decide any future constitutional status. If they start to look as if they do have a selfish or strategic interest, it's very difficult to uphold that line, which has been one of the central aspects of the whole peace process since the 1990s.
My guest is Adrian Little. He's Belfast-born. He's a professor of political science at Melbourne University. So where is Sinn Féin in all of this? Because they've got no interest, have they, in having direct Westminster rules sort of embedded?
Well, in some respects, they're probably sitting back and rubbing their hands together. They might have the popcorn out while they're watching some of this, just because the degree of chaos is, plays into their hands to some extent. They had a good election again. As I say, they have effectively wiped out their main opponent within nationalist politics. They've now got seven Westminster seats, which, of course, they don't take up. And they're far and away the strongest nationalist party.
Gerry Adams has been to see Theresa May, hasn't he?
Yeah, and look, I think the parties are visiting to Westminster. So that's a clear sign that it's come home to Theresa May that it's not just a matter of negotiating a deal with the DUP. It's also ensuring that the other political parties in Northern Ireland are, if not content, satisfied with the nature of that deal. Wow. And the fact that it wouldn't be a threat to Northern Ireland. But it's very difficult to see how they would all agree on that when they can't actually agree to govern together.
Well, quite. If Theresa May does manage to stitch together a small majority government deal between the Tories and the DUP, might it be popular in Northern Ireland because of the shopping list, the investment shopping list that the DUP is demanding, Adrian?
Well, Northern Ireland has always been a beneficiary of enormous investment from the British government and from the European Union. So I doubt that there would be great contentment on the basis of what the DUP was able to negotiate. And much more important still in Northern Ireland is the national question. Mm. And the fact of the matter is that, 45% of the population are Catholics, nationalists of one variant or another. And it's very unlikely that they would take anything that the DUP wins as some kind of overall gain for them.
I saw a very funny description, I think, in The Economist. The description of the DUP is a party with who emphasises the Bible with fortnightly bin collections. So this is really, can you imagine an English Prime Minister, a UK Prime Minister, doing a deal of any sort with a party like this?
Well, I think that, you know, it's needs must as far as the Conservative Party are concerned. I don't think they've got any great appetite for governing with the DUP, but it's either that or a minority government at the moment. So, and as I said earlier, I think that means a return to the polls. Whilst perhaps the result wouldn't be repeated, I think they're genuinely worried about the inroads that Jeremy Corbyn made this time around.
Well, as Martin Wolf said in the Financial Times yesterday, it could be even worse. It could be the same result from an election. You never know. But look, finally to Brexit. Who knows what will happen once government is formed? But in terms of Northern Ireland, Arlene Foster from the DUP said one of her main aims was to get a good deal on Brexit for Northern Ireland. So what is the DUP position on Brexit?
So the DUP advocated leaving the European Union, but it didn't appear to have a very strong idea of what that would mean in terms of the border. So they are now suggesting that they don't want to see a hard border, but it's actually very, very difficult to see how there couldn't be a hard border somewhere between either the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, or between the island of Ireland and the rest of Great Britain. Now, the latter is just not an option for the DUP. They do not want to see a situation where British citizens living in Northern Ireland, you know, have to carry passports or go through security control to get into the rest of the United Kingdom. And therefore, because there is this land border with the Republic of Ireland, the only land border with the European Union, it's very hard to see how that couldn't be more securitized than it is now. And the people, especially those people who live in border areas, it's been one of the major features of the peace is just how easy it is to travel across the border nowadays. Whereas in the past, it was securitized and you were showing ID and army checkpoints and so forth. Nowadays, you don't actually know you're over the border until you've actually crossed. It's just a change of road signs, etc. So it's very, very hard to see how there wouldn't be some greater securitization to prevent the free movement of people in particular.
What a brew. Thank you very much indeed for that overview, sobering though it is. Adrian Little, I appreciate your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.